Hello?
Yo.
Hey! Oh. I think Charlie just got picked up by the police. Everybody, and welcome to the second entry into Nitrobeard's interview-focused podcast, Sideburned. I'm Brian Belita, and tonight I'm joined by Charlie Bumfield, a man who launched a Kickstarter for handmade wooden dice with a $300 goal and ended up with 300 times that.
Hey, how's it going, man?
It is also my supreme pleasure to introduce my co-interviewer, one of the fellows behind Idle Thumbs, which also had a recently successful Kickstarter, and designer at Telltale Games, Sean Vanneman.
Hey, how's it going?
Yeah, so super thanks to both of you guys coming out for joining me. And it's kind of interesting. There is actually a connection here between this. I saw Sean on Twitter mention this Kickstarter about dice. And so I immediately went there, saw what Charlie was doing, pledged my money. And then once I kind of got to the end of it and was just really impressed and happy with how well your Kickstarter had done, Charlie, I was like, hey, we should bring him on, talk to him, find out a little bit about the Kickstarter, kind of how it's changed his life. And decided to invite Sean since he first brought it to my attention, of course, as a denizen of podcasts around the internet. And here we are tonight.
Yeah, man. I mean, it was the whole Kickstarter thing was great. I never expected it to come anywhere near being as big as it turned out to be. I mean, I was asking for $300 in a whole
Right.
Sorry, the $300 goal is my favorite part of your story. Where it's like, can I have $300? It's like, yeah, you can have 300. You know what? What if we just multiply that by 3,000? Would that be okay? Like, oh, I don't know. That's my favorite part of the entire story.
It absolutely boggles my mind. I mean, that's like, I think, of course, there were people joking, like, yeah, I'll start a Kickstarter to fund my lunch. I need $25 to go eat lunch. And, but yeah, I just think amongst all the other Kickstarters that I've seen, $300 is just such a low goal. I mean, what were you originally planning? I know you've mentioned that you were kind of just wanted to make some dice for some friends and thought you'd open it up.
Yeah, well, what started out, we started playing the Dresden Files game system, I guess about now 2 months ago. And I don't know if you guys have ever played it. It uses the Open Fate system, mm-hmm. which uses D6s, but they're cut with plus and minuses on the sides, as opposed to 1 through 6.
Right.
And even though I live in the big city of Dallas, I couldn't find any fudge dice on my side of town. And I didn't want to order fudge dice because I'm too cheap to pay more for shipping than the dice cost.
Right. That's the whole, if you've ever ordered anything from monoprice.com, you can get like 8,000 feet of coaxial cable for $3, but then you have to spend $8 in shipping.
Yeah. So I basically grabbed some wood stock I had laying around and made a bunch of really nice wooden dice for my fraternity brothers that we game with every weekend, and started out just as a gift for my friends that I play with, and I made them with a miter saw. And
I was just gonna say, were you using a miter saw? Because that's like, if I went in the garage, that's the only thing I would like. I guess I'm like, oh yeah, you could probably make a dice with like a miter saw. I guess you'd have to cut it like, yeah. That's. I was just gonna ask you that.
Oh yeah, it was basic hand tools. I mean, it was just what I, because my garage was set up to work on my car. Speaking of which, just as a side note, I have this really awesome turbo sitting on my desk that UPS just dropped off. So I have it now.
But how does it work with dice?
Well, it doesn't. So once the Kickstarter got launched, and we did my $300 goal in the first 10 minutes at midnight, because I launched it at midnight because I was up really late that night, and I woke up the next morning and we'd done over $1,000 in sales.
The thing that's absolutely insane, I'm looking at this site, kicktrack.com, track with a Q, which just kind of charts it over time, and it shows some graphs and stuff. And what amazes me is that you started off, you know, your first night making a little bit of money, but the very last day, I think you made more than like quadruple your biggest day previous to that.
Yeah, we did something. I want to say it was almost 30 grand in the last day.
According to this site, it says it was 22,000 in the last day.
22,000. Okay, that sounds right. So
22 grand in a day is
in a day
pretty goddamn great. That's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, we were. I kept looking at every time I looked at the Kickstarter thing, I was like, it's got to hit a plateau somewhere. I mean, there can't be that many guys wanting wood dice. So I mean, I figured you know, we start off with like the usual initial rush for Kickstarter, and then it would kind of plane out, and we might do 3,000 or 4,000 after the first day. And then, the next day we'd already cleared 3 grand, and I'm like, okay, well, there goes that goal. And then I went, I guess it was a couple of days after that, I had to go to Portland for a, for an automotive thing. For your listeners, that probably don't know who the hell I am or anything. So I run a show called Burnout Radio, which is basically kind of like your show, only we talk about cars.
Right. Yeah. I completely should have mentioned that. I did a terrible job at the intro, but, Charlie also runs, you run burnoutradio.com, which you do video, as well.
Yeah, we do. Well, we don't do near as much as we used to because it's extremely expensive to shoot video. And I'm not a real pretty man, so I don't look good on camera.
And yet here we are staring at you.
Is my camera on? Wow.
But right, so that, and then also, I think Car Care 101.
Yeah, which is basically chronicling the buildup of my my Project Miata.
Oh, okay, so that's an actual specific project.
Yeah, that's well. It's kind of. I mean, we'll add more cars to it as we go along. Right now, we have one project car, and it's my girl's car, so that we're going to be stuffing a gigantic V8 into and making embarrassments of forces on the racetrack.
Nice.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, you posted up a handful of photos just recently of kind of because you're basically transferring your garage into a workshop for making dice.
Yeah.
So you've gone out. You've obviously purchased a lot of equipment. Some fancy mills, because you did actually get the two backers so you could make the D20s and the entire kind of sets.
Yeah, which totally surprised the hell out of me. Because I did the backer level for the D20 sets thinking that nobody was going to back. It was $19,000 for some D20 dice.
Right. It was a pipe dream. Just you toss it up there as like, hey, whatever. Let's see what happens.
Yeah, I was like, if somebody wants to back it, sure, we'll do some really nice dice for them. Because I was going to make them anyway, much further down the road. But they I think it was like within 24 hours we had one guy jump on it, and then as soon as I posted the polyhedral mock-up of the wireframe, within 30 seconds somebody else had upped their bid to cover the other backer level, because there were just two of them. And I initially listed those as an answer to everybody's question, are you going to make D20 dice?
Right. Because right, that's the inevitable question that people are asking.
Yeah.
So but to have two backers for that, I mean, that really amazed me that we had some guys step up for that. So they pretty much covered probably 80% of the cost of the CNC machine with those two backer levels. And so we were able to buy our first CNC machine, which we'll use to do the prototypes. And then we'll be buying a much, much nicer CNC machine when we actually do our Kickstarter for the full D20 sets. So.
Nice. Now, I contemplated, like, I fought some battles with myself wondering about if I wanted to do that. I don't play a lot of games that kind of use the full sets of dice, but it's just the fact that it was there. And there must be something wrong with me that I'm leaning more towards being okay spending almost $2,000 on 7 sets of dice than I am on spending $400 to buy myself a new lens for my camera.
Yeah, I was kind of the same way. I didn't really expect anybody to spend that much on dice, but we've got two great backers. I mean, they're with those two backer levels, what I'm doing is they're actually part of the development process. So they get they're kind of get to see an inside look when especially once the CNC machine gets here, because I'm kind of at a stopping point until Tay gets off their butt and ships the mill. Apparently, one of their suppliers went belly up the week before I bought the mill.
Oh man.
So they're and the supplier makes the castings that they machine into the bed and the upright for the Z axis. So it's basically the two frames that the mill is built on. So they're scrambling now trying to get the get that fixed. They're supposed to be shipping next week. So as soon as they get here, we'll start messing with that as we continue to crank out massive amounts of D6s.
Yeah. Do you have a final count on how many dice you're making?
I have a very good estimate, somewhere between 7,500 and 8,000 dice. So
that's a handful for sure.
Yeah,
that would be big hands.
Right, that would be huge hands. So actually, I want to ask Sean real quick. How did you end up finding about this Kickstarter?
You know, I was just looking around, to be perfectly honest. You know, we put up the Idle Thumbs Kickstarter, which is, you know, a very like similar experience to Charlie, where you have something you think that X amount of people are kind of into and you're excited about it, and then all of a sudden people start showing up to your Kickstarter page and backing you at levels that you thought were kind of hilarious. And yeah, you start to say like, whoa, like, wait a minute. Like, you guys are really, like, I mean, you know, we always knew people were fans of Idle Thumbs, but it was just, we knew nothing about what we, like, we obviously had no expectations of where we ended up. So, I mean, at that, after that, I would spend a lot of time on, like, I mean, and I had been a big Kickstarter fan just sort of before, for probably about a year and a half. Mm-hmm. And I think I was just exploring. And the thing that boggled me about Charlie's Kickstarter, and sort of still does about his success, is that there's no video. Like, Charlie just put up really great photos of what he was making and said, I can clearly make this because here's a photograph of them.
Yeah.
And he filled a niche, that was, I mean, obviously not addressed in the marketplace and clearly not addressed on Kickstarter.
Yeah.
So I found it and said, like, I play a lot of backgammon. So I live in San Francisco, and I got a group of friends who play a lot of really angry backgammon together. Like, we'll spend half a day. We ran out of a house up in Tahoe at New Year's with like 12 of us, and we all brought our wives and girlfriends, and the six dudes just sat around, and then, oh God, the wives and girls would get so pissed. Like, let's go outside, let's go hiking, let's go skiing. And we would just play backgammon and just scream at each other the whole time. And everybody has their dice with them. They have two dice, and these are my lucky dice. Mm-hmm. And I looked at Charlie's Kickstarter and said, those are my backgammon dice right there. Finally, handmade.
I need those dice.
That's what I need. And so that's how I play board games, obviously, and I play a lot of board games with the Idle Thumbs guys, Jake and Chris. And that wasn't my impetus. I just said, these are going to be my lucky die. This is what I'm going to carry around. So I sent them to the backgammon group, the backgammon guys, and then I tweeted about it. But that's how, I mean, I really was just poking around. And I probably poke around on Kickstarter two or three times a week. And mm-hmm. then we have a curated account on there as Idle Thumbs, where we say, hey, you know, you can go to like Idle Thumbs. I mean, you can go to kickstarter.com/curated maybe slash Idle Thumbs. It's something. There's a curated group where you sort of pick out as an institution, these are the things that we think are worth your time. And that was one of the first ones that went up there, was Artisan Dice. And so that's why I was kind of poking around a little deeper than I would have before.
Yeah.
But yeah, well, I think I was backer 42, if I remember correctly. So I wasn't I wasn't that early, but ultimately.
In the grand scheme of things, at the end, you had how many backers, Charlie? Do you have a number?
We had 1,131 actually in the Kickstarter, and then we probably have another 20 that contacted me the day after the Kickstarter ended that I let pay over PayPal.
Yeah, so out of that many, 42 is pretty early on. But you're absolutely right. I mean, it did fill a niche that really kind of wasn't being supplied. I had been looking around because just recently in the last year, I had really gotten into playing Arkham Horror, which uses D6s.
Yeah.
And you know, and I went out to kind of the local comic book shop and I bought, you know, like a pack of 12 dice made by, I want to say it's like Crystal something. I don't know, but it's, you know, kind of Globo dice, I guess, if you want to call it that. So the second I saw you mention it on Twitter, I went there and, you know, saw all these woods he was making his dice happen. And I was just, I got to have a pair. These will be my Cthulhu slaying dice, which became even more apparent because when I first pledged, Charlie just had, the highest level you had was the dice, or were the dice made it from, what are they, staves? Is that the right word?
Staves?
It was the oak barrel staves from...
Yes, from Jack Daniels, yeah. And so I grabbed those, and then after kind of your first overpledge milestone, you added the ancient Irish bog oak. And
yeah.
I just thought that was much more suitable for Cthulhu slaying. If I'm going to be killing some Prohibition-era monsters, I want ancient Irish bog oak.
It's a must.
Yeah. And then really, I mean, because your dice product ended up at, let's see, 30,000% of what you originally asked for.
Yeah.
You did a really good job of adding a lot of kind of different woods. And I'm kind of curious how one goes around procuring different types of woods, like 50,000-year-old Kuari wood.
Lots and lots of phone calls. There are not a whole lot of wood suppliers that believe in the internet yet. So,
we're just making phone calls?
Yeah, making lots of phone calls. So, and you may find on a woodworking forum somewhere, some guy that's got an email address that posted up like 3 years ago that he had this.
Right.
So you email him saying, hey, where did you get that at?
So is this something that you had absolutely any experience with before?
I mean, I did a little wood carving. My grandfather is a master wood carver. He is by far and away better than anybody I've ever seen. He does realistic looking birds and like boots and cool stuff like that. He's one of those guys who can carve a spear inside of a cube out of one piece of wood.
Right. Yeah. One of those. Oh, that's insane.
Yeah. So, I mean, I've been exposed to it, but I was not really big into woodworking or anything like that. I was more into doing, you know, welding and working with cars and you know, sitting out in my garage, drinking a beer, sweating my butt off, and cussing my car.
Do you really feel like it's been a good effort until you've cussed at something?
Well, it's mandatory, dude.
Right, and until you've put blood, sweat, and tears into it. I mean, for me, unless I've put some blood and swearing into building a computer, it's not really a computer.
Yeah, it doesn't have a life yet. It's not got a soul. You got to bleed on it a little bit.
Yeah. So actually, that brings me to my next question. Do you have any kind of, because I mean, Nitrobeard, our podcast, we mainly do a lot of talk about video games. Aside from board games and cards, I mean, do you play video games at all, or are you more pretty much just strictly board games?
I grew up in a household that played video games religiously. My dad is one of the biggest gamers you've ever met. And it's kind of an odd juxtaposition because most gamer guys aren't really into manly stuff, so to speak. The traditional manly stuff. They're more
like maintaining your beard and
exactly. most of them wouldn't have any clue what a cherry picker is. It's an engine hoist. But in my family, I mean, we played video games, and the earliest house I grew up in, when we had like one of the first Nintendos off the boat when I lived in Florida, and we had this huge old farmhouse that you could see holes through the floor, and we didn't have any air conditioning or anything like that. But we had this really, really nice 6-car garage that had a bay for the race car, had 2 bays for all the methanol-fueled go-karts we ran, the four-wheel-drive pickup truck, all that kind of stuff. So I kind of grew up doing both of that and playing, you know, Nintendo and stuff and getting into computer games. I mean, I started flying flight sims when I guess it was Aces of the Pacific was the first one I flew. And I'm still really big into flying, like Microsoft Flight Simulator, Combat Flight Simulator, Falcon 4.0, which is now into open source development. Yeah, and then I'm a huge Star Wars nut. So Star Wars Galaxies, played that forever until Sony ruined it the final time. and then I started playing Star Wars Galaxies and started doing the Kickstarter thing and promptly had to quit playing Star Wars Galaxies.
Right. So, well, that answers that about playing video games religiously. So is that how you settled scores in your house?
There was a lot of that. Yeah.
How many siblings do you have?
I've got one little sister, who is mean.
like at Street Fighter or?
The one that we used to do was a four-player wrestling game on the Super Nintendo.
Oh, that was WCW versus NWO?
No, it was like Super Smash. That was Super Smash Brothers, maybe. I don't remember. It had nothing realistic about it. It was just these fake cartoon characters. They had like the fat sumo wrestler that had this pancake batter attack.
Oh,
pancake batter attack. That sounds fantastic.
Yeah, it was really stupid wrestling stuff that we used to get really into playing. So, and Madden. Played a whole hell of a lot of Madden football.
I remember I've only really had experience once with a football game, and that was in college. And some friends dragged me over to the room, and we played. I want to say it was Blitz something. I have no idea, but all I remember is that I was sitting there with my friend, had no idea what I was doing. And he just said, "All right, Brian, you just run forward and you just charge and you blitz him." And apparently that's all you have to do to win. But other than that, I've never really played any sports games beyond kind of extreme sports games, because that's sort of my thing. I know how you were saying, I guess kind of the stereotype is that video game players and stuff aren't really into quote unquote manly stuff. You have cars, and I have jumping off of buildings and such. I've been doing parkour for like 5 years, and I always find it really interesting when there are these huge juxtapositions of what somebody does on one side and on the complete other side of things. So it really interested me that you had cars, that you just ran an entire site and podcast about cars, and then here you are making dice and playing board games all the time.
Yeah, and I get that from my automotive. I guess the technical word is journalist. I don't believe that I am a journalist because most automotive journalists are fat, bald, white, self-entitled assholes. I'm just fat, bald, and white. I'm an asshole, but I'm not self-entitled.
There you go.
So and talking to a lot of my friends that are do the automotive stuff, they're like, "So you're making dice now?" They
So
just
what
can't.
did you what was your full-time job before this?
I actually haven't had a full-time job since I quit managing a photo studio in Plano about 5, 6 years ago. I freelanced, but well, that was pretty much full-time. When I say freelance, I don't mean I was in between jobs. I mean I freelanced all the time
Sure,
for different ad agencies around Dallas, doing photography, web design, back-end coding, all that kind of stuff. Because I'm a one-man web design shop. I'd like the Artisan Dice site, the Burnout Radio site, all stuff. You see, I did all that from start to finish.
That's great. Well, more power to you.
Thank you, sir. And so I did that for a while. I got really tired of working with art directors. I apologize to be the one of your art directors, but they're the bane of my existence.
I'm
So
not
I
my
got really
director.
tired of having to deal with that, and so I opened my own company. And about 2 years after that, the economy tanked, and I had several tens of thousands of dollars worth of clients not pay me in 1 year.
Oh, man.
So at the end of the year, I'd made half what my lowest paid employee did, and I said, "Screw this, I'm done." And I've been running my parents' sporting goods store out in Silver Springs for the past couple of years, and then that recently, basically the economy out there has just gotten so bad that they can't keep it afloat. So I started running, or I basically I was for the past 3 months, I really haven't had a job because I gave all my clients away to some other guys that were doing web design stuff. So I was just fixing to go start back in doing writing code for a living, and I absolutely hate writing code.
Right. I'm the same way. I'm more of a, I guess, I don't know, I guess a graphic or web designer. I can do the code, but I don't enjoy doing the code so much.
Yeah. So I mean, I'm really, really, really good at writing code, but I hate it with a passion. So I was really not looking forward to doing that. And then we did this Kickstarter thing, and I was initially looking, for $300. That would get where I could order and get a bit of a volume discount from one of my suppliers, which is why we started with the $300 goal. And I kind of looked at all the other Kickstarter goals, and I was like, "Really? You need that much to start your business? You've already got the prototypes done, dude. I see them. So why do you need all that money?" So for me, it was, set a realistic goal, because I don't want to back a Kickstarter project and have Amazon take the cash out of my account for a month and then
Right.
end up getting anything.
Well, I
So
feel bad because we asked for 30 grand.
that's a little bit different, man. You guys got hellacious server upkeep and stuff for your show. You
That's
have to make
true.
a show.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, we've on our like on 3 Moves Ahead, which is now like kind of an Idle Thumbs podcast, we kind of addressed like why we asked for what we asked for, but like we still kind of get it pops up more on Twitter than anywhere else, like the why do you need X to do Y sort of thing. But
Yeah.
and I think we've addressed that a little bit, but yeah, it's like when it was just like $300, he's gonna make more than that. And like by the time that I had backed you obviously had. But I mean, was it it's got to be pretty gratifying to go from this is just something I think I can do to, oh, I have, this is a full-time job now.
Well, like, I wasn't even intending to go to do this as a full-time job or even a part-time gig. I mean, my buddies that I made the dice for, they hounded me for 2 weeks before I even even thought about doing the Kickstarter. And so I sat down, we played Saturday, which we play out every Saturday night, and it was like 2 o'clock in the morning, and Gabe and Zach had stayed over late, and I was a little bit inebriated, and they kept hounding me, and finally I ran off at the mouth, and I was like, fine, I'll build a website and do the damn Kickstarter, go home.
Anything to get out of my house.
Yeah, pretty much. It was 2 o'clock in the morning, I wanted to go to bed. So I woke up the next morning, did I really agree to do that? Oh, crap. So,
out of curiosity, from inception to launch, how much time was in between?
24 hours.
Jeez.
That's a pretty good turnaround time.
Yeah, that's pretty great.
I basically said, okay, if I'm going to do this Kickstarter thing, I'll give it one day.
And you'd already built like a few dice, so you could take photos of some stuff.
Well, all those dice that you guys saw, they're the ones I gave to my players.
Oh, cool.
The ones like on artisandice.com that are kind of cycling through and such.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all those with the black background. And that background is actually my touchpad screen.
That's a pretty good solution for a product shot, actually.
Yeah, so I didn't really want to go set up all my studio equipment, because I have – my studio equipment is not set up to do small stuff like that. I have this huge, like, 4-foot by 4-foot light box that I have to get out and set up and lights and all that good stuff.
Right.
So I just grabbed that and basically a white sheet and shot the product shots for the dice in like 10 minutes.
Well, the thing is like, in lieu of a video, and obviously how are you going to shoot dice in a video to make them like more compelling than they are in still, like your photography background was clearly part of your success, and you could show so clearly your ability to make a quality product.
Yeah, and for me, I guess, like you said, the photography background, if you look at any of the sites I do, pictures play a big part in either telling the story or as part of the design. Words, you guys seen this. When you surf around the internet, you don't read. You skip from picture to picture, and you kind of fill in the blanks with the words on the page. Especially when you're doing like when you're looking for products and stuff, you want to see what it looks like, and then you'll go. And then if the picture looks good, you'll go back and read about it.
Pretty much, yeah. You're right, and I think that's actually a really good point, Sean. It's only now that I realized you didn't have a Kickstarter video, which is kind of a staple now. That kind of things have that if it's a Kickstarter, it's got a video. And you have a general idea of what these videos are going to go like. But all you had is just that kind of very big image of the type of just those four dice just kind of sitting there. And that's exactly what people want.
Yeah, and well, the Kickstarter thing was like, you sure you don't want to do a video? If you don't have a video, it asks you like twice before you publish it.
Like a prompt in the back end.
Yeah.
The video is a really big deal. I mean, even they've kind of changed their sort of proposal mechanism now, where like when we threw up the Idle Thumbs Kickstarter, we went through like a couple rounds of vetting, like just this is what we think about your project, this is what you guys should do differently, et cetera, et cetera. And I think from what I understand, and I don't really have like direct knowledge of this, but I feel like it's maybe a little different now, but the video, both like verbally through the Kickstarter folks and in the text of putting up a video, is like super important. If you don't put up a video, you're insane. But I think, like, I don't know what a video would have brought extra to art, like to Charlie's Kickstarter. I think you just need two photos of dice that this guy can make, and they look beautiful. So yes, send me those, please. Here's my money.
That's kind of why I looked at it. I was like, I could do a video, but I said I would only spend 24 hours starting this thing. It's already 23 hours into it, and I really don't want to put any more time. Because at the time, I didn't think it was actually going to make even the $300. I thought I would be begging and all my cousins and uncles and brothers and all that good stuff, and a cat.
Right. It would be a Kickstarter amongst friends.
Yeah, pretty much. So I was like, and we're only asking for $300. So I really don't want to put the time and effort into making a video. And who really wants to see a video of a fat, bald guy begging for money?
It may not make you any money, but it can win like Sundance, perhaps.
Yeah. Oh no, you're absolutely right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Charlie's Dice.
Well, that was the hardest thing. I mean, with Idle Thumbs, like, we shot 3 videos, and each one after the next, we were like, oh god, this is garbage. Oh god, this is garbage. Just because it wasn't a visual medium. Like, Idle Thumbs was never something that was meant to be in a video. So shooting this overly produced, you have to overly produce a video. You can't just one-off it, you know? You can't just say, oh, I'm going to take an hour and make a video. It'll just look like a YouTube confessional.
Right.
You know, and the video process was the absolute hardest process of our Kickstarter. No, like, soup to nuts, end of the day. If somebody said you have to go back and redo any part of the Kickstarter, Chris, Jake, and I would all beg not to do the video again. And this is a Kickstarter that offered a video game, a full video game as a reward.
Right, a thing you can play.
And anybody would, like, so we would just, the video is torture, absolute torture.
Well, it's the thing that people, you know, see, it's what they look for. It's when you think of Kickstarter, you immediately think Kickstarter video for the most part. So it's the thing that obviously you're using to sell. So, I mean, it's the one you're going to be the most critical of. And then here's Charlie. He's just like, I'm just going to put some dice on my touchpad and take a photo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a terrible Texan accent, by the way.
It's the perfect product with the perfect, like, I mean, and they're, again, if you, like you said it before, Ryan, like, if you walk into your local game store and you say, oh, I need some dice, I'm playing this game, the selection is not awe-inspiring.
It's grim.
Functional. It's grim and, if at best, functional. So to see dice that are made out of, like, various woods and made by hand, of course, that's what you want. And especially when they're, you know, I mean, I think at the end of the day, for a Kickstarter, Charlie, they're a fair price, you know, of course. $27 for 4 die? Yeah, absolutely. Like, that's absolutely reasonable, you know. And I think
I'm completely
across wrong. The board, I think you did everything really, correct. I think you see a lot of Kickstarters that don't, that charge, and charge is the wrong word, but ask too much per tier.
Mm-hmm.
And don't really have a sense of what things are worth or how much time it's going to take to fulfill a certain tier, you know. And all that matters at the end of the day, because you can end up, you can, it's very easy to run a Kickstarter and end up in the red. And I think if you told that to your average person on the internet, they would think you were crazy because of amounts of thousands of dollars that are thrown around on Kickstarter. But if you don't have a very clear sense of what you're trying to deliver to somebody and what it takes to do that, you're going to quickly find yourself in a hole. And top to bottom, it feels like for a 24-hour Kickstarter, it's remarkably well thought out.
Yeah, you did a really good job of kind of pricing and giving a good number of options. You know, you kind of had a level where, you know, a person could just get a random selection of dice. Which I actually did. I had originally pledged, and then I upped for the Ancient Irish Bog Oak. And then my wife and I are about to have our first kid end of May. And
congratulations!
And thank you. Yeah. And so I decided, I was like, you know what? I'm gonna add one more set random dice from Charlie, and kind of keep that. And if my kid should, you know, happen to get into the same kind of things that I'm into, then it's something I could pass on to him one day. And it's that kind of thing. You know, it's handmade. And it's you're right. It's kind of I forget how you actually sold it on your site, but you were like, you know, any board gamer knows that his dice is a representation of his whatever. I forget what the actual wording was, but
I can pull it up real quick. It's now you get me wondering what I wrote.
Well, the thing I'm looking at right now is ended up fighting with the laser cutter into the wee hours of the morning.
Oh God, that laser cutter! I'm gonna kill somebody. So, I specifically ordered this laser cutter, and I won't name the company because I'm sure they're a great company and I just got a bum deal, but I ordered this laser company because it's supposed to be made in America and not some cheap Chinese piece of crap. This laser cutter shows up, the number 2 laser is not even mounted. They're supposed to be aligned at the factory. All right, so it's just hanging loose by some wires. One of the servo motors is only half bolted in. The Z axis, or not the Z axis, the Y axis on the table is not even square to the X axis. The list just goes on and on and on. So don't send me a $4,000 laser cutter with it includes the instructions. Solder this wire to the 5-volt pin on the USB card.
That's right. I do remember seeing you saying, like, if the assembly requires soldering wires, I'm not quite sure I want anything to do with it.
Yeah, I mean, or I'm not going to pay $4,000 for it. It's more than I paid for my car outside.
So we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I want to find out what kind of board game suggestions both of you have, and we'll probably delve a bit more into the Artisan Dice project. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Brian Bellina, and of course, I am joined by Charlie Brumfield, who makes great wooden dice with his bare hands and teeth.
Well, I got beaver teeth, but I don't chew on the dice.
All right. And I'm joined with by Sean Vanabin from Idle Thumbs and Telltale Games.
Hey.
All right.
So we've been talking about Charlie's project, and we've been talking a lot about his dice and how he makes some of the different kind of woods. But of course, these dice get used for things, apparently, allegedly. Now, you say these dice are, and I know a lot of people kind of think that, especially these dice in particular that you make, are kind of maybe just for show, but you actually make a way in such a, or sorry, you make them in such a way that you can throw them down on some tables and actually utilize them, right?
Yeah, these are not shelf queens. These nice. Aren't like the stone dice that you buy and you can't play with because they get chipped or whatnot. No, I mean, throw these in your dice bag, play with them, whatever. I mean, the other night I was fishing one out of the bottom of a rum and coke.
yeah, I'd like to see your board games, Charlie. These sound rather interesting.
We don't play a whole lot of board games as much as we play RPGs. And when I say play RPGs, it's really a bunch of grown men sitting around my coffee table getting obnoxiously drunk and playing make-believe. It's kind of sad, really.
Charlie, the next time I am in the Dallas-Fort Worth Plano area, we're giving you a call. we're gonna get trashed on Jack and Cokes and play some RPGs, I think, because that sounds like a goddamn good time.
Was it just for the highest level backing, or maybe it was that's it any backing that you said, like, you give anyone who donates at this level 10,000 bonus attribute points in a D&D game that you run?
Yeah, in any future D&D, I think it's at the D20 backer level, the $2,000 backer
yep,
level.
Yep.
And that stems from me and my players do. I am bad as a DM about giving out experience or fate points or extra what are they called in Star Wars? I can't remember now. Action points?
Midichlorians?
Yeah. No, it's Midichlorians.
Brian.
Was that the wrong answer?
That's the path to the dark side. No, but I'm bad about getting, if somebody orders a pizza, I'll give them extra experience or something like that. So
that's awesome. I'm okay with liberal rules. I know with Arkham Horror, if somebody's just doing really badly and maybe just had to fight, a Star Spawn and a Chthonian and a Hound of Tyndalos, they're like, I'm going to buy the pizza if you let me re-roll this fight. And, we'll be a little liberal with it.
Yeah, we don't, the rules for us are more guidelines.
Right.
It's more important to have fun and the way I DM is, and the way I found to be the most effective way to DM is to railroad your players without them actually thinking they're being railroaded.
I'm not sure how I feel about that.
it's you give them choices, and if it's not a choice you wanted, they obviously have to fail.
Well, there you go. That's that. So,
little things like, instead of saying, new DM's real bad about this. No, you can't go that way. Well, sure you can go that way, but the guy
go that saying, way, no. Yeah.
So you don't see him when he gets to the corner. Which way would you? You got a 50-50 shot. And of course, whichever way they pick is going to be wrong. But they don't know that.
I figure it's better to give them the option than to say no. You don't want to go that way.
Yeah, that's just good game design. You got to say yes, and I'm sorry.
Right. Yeah. Like I've been playing Legend of Grimlock lately.
Oh man, yeah, that's a good game.
Which I don't know. So Sean, you've obviously played it. Charlie, do you know what Legend of Grimlock?
I haven't the slightest clue what that is.
It's kind of an old school tile-based dungeon crawler where you kind of have a party of four, then they're all on the same tile, and it's basically a dungeon crawler moving around. And
I have lost hours of my life playing those games.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. So I mean, yes, I can. I have the option of going into this room full of spiders. And it's a pretty brutal game. Like, it just gives no fucks, and it won't forgive, it won't say sorry for anything. It'll say, well, you wandered into a room full of spiders, and then it'll lock the door behind you. Yeah.
No, it's good.
It is really good.
It's like being a child, or being a 10-year-old, again, I should say. You're just like, what? Oh, God. Okay. That's just all I remember, like, for a good solid 10 years of my life playing video games. It was just... Oh God! See, oh God! Really? This is oh God!
Yeah.
Every time I made a bad choice,
it's crazy. I remember I had played. You know, I think my brother had a Game Boy, and I remember playing like Wario Land or something on it. And you know, I'm playing it and doing good and beating the levels. And I go back and play it now, and I seem to have a really hard time with it. Like I find it more difficult than I did when I was a kid.
No, I definitely feel that way. I mean, even with games that I'm not so far evolved from, like if you, I'm relatively youngish, but like I'm 28, and going back and playing a game like Resident Evil 4 that is very difficult. When that game came out, all I was doing was like going to college and playing video games.
Yeah.
So I was my aptitude and my skill was at a level that it is not now. And it's joke. Like I can't even get through this. I get to the first level where the village or the mans are coming out of everywhere.
Las Plagas.
And, yeah, and it's a cartoon of like it's just me trying to run back. And start.
Ducking into doors and zombies are coming out of the doors. And
if it was a narrative possibility for Leon to run back to his Jeep and just go no I don't think so. Sorry, President's daughter. You're on your own. Yeah.
That's you belong to them now.
Like, it's just me running into the imaginary wall where I'm not allowed to go back to that Jeep. So it's funny because, like, yeah, I mean, games that you play when you're growing up, you have a different – I guess, like, your priorities are different. So more of your brain cells can be working on it in any given moment, even when you're not playing the game.
Right.
Yeah. That's a very fair point.
Yeah.
Oh man. For me, it's playing first person shooters now, like Medal of Honor, not Medal of Honor. Forget now. What's a really awesome Modern Warfare? That's it. Playing that now in multiplayer, I get my ass handed to me.
Oh yeah.
It's not even me.
You'll be stabbed by a guy you never see
from across the map.
It's about guns. Yeah.
Yeah,
there was actually a really fantastic article. I can't remember in what publication it was that about like you jump after beating a campaign in modern games. You'll play, you know, like a StarCraft 2 or, you know, a game that's relatively popular and new, and you'll go all the way through the campaign that has a robust single player experience, and you'll say, oh man, like I defeated the game on hard. I'm ready for whatever sort of pitfalls await me in the multiplayer experience.
The multiverse.
And then you just get destroyed. You just get like just ripped in half by 9-year-olds, and you have this
9-year-olds on the other side of the world, I might add.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You have this crisis where you say, "Why am I not good at this? I thought I was good at this." And then, anyway, the point is the article is all about when you're new at video games or new at anything and you haven't spent the sort of hours that guys such as ourselves who have jobs and lives and girlfriends and wives don't have, you just simply are unaware of the aspects of that game that you're missing, that you're blind to. So you jump in and you say, oh, I died. Ugh.
What? Right, ugh.
You know, as opposed to the guy who's been playing for 60 hours a week who says, I died because I didn't check around the corner of this one hidden spot where between the geo there's enough space for a guy to hide. Next time, I just got to check that really quick and drop a grenade.
Right.
Like, duh, I do that every time. From now on, I'll never not do that. You know? And you're dying in ways you can't understand.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that may be part of the reason why I've always kind of dabbled in board games here and there, but more recently I've gotten more and more into board games, like I said, like Arkham Horror, and my friends and I play a lot of Heroescape, which is kind of board games light, but it lets you live out basically any kind of childhood comic book fantasy you might have, because there's just a community that makes kind of user stat cards for any single comic book hero you can think of. So we have games where you've got like Batman fighting, you know, Superman and Freakazoid, basically any combination you can think of, we can have it. But anyways, part of the reason I think that board games
become... Batman's fighting Freakazoids.
Batman's fighting Freakazoids. Yes, you heard it.
Batman wins, but carry on.
But I think that's one of the reasons why board games have, at least for me, become more prevalent in my life, because whereas I may not need... It's still getting together with people and playing games. You know, it's multiplayer, whatever you want to call it. But it doesn't so much rely on skill. You know, I'm rolling the dice. It's up to the dice whether I do well or not. So there's kind of an interesting, switch there between something that requires quote-unquote skill and then something that, sure, you can strategize about, but then here you go, you get to toss some dice. And you don't know whether it's going to go absolutely. Well or bad for you.
You know, and I think between, like Chris and I we talk about this a lot on Auto Thumbs, or just in, like, when we have board game nights with the guys in SF, about, you know, I think there are games that are, like, very, like, German-style board games that are strictly mechanical, and your ability to vary, to, like, understand the mechanics is going to make you triumphant in this game, mostly. And a game we play often is a game called Imperial 2030, which is kind of dense but really, really fun. And we've played there's actually a Kickstarter board game called Eminent Domain that we've talked about in the cast a little bit, that is a deck building game, but only based around like five cards essentially, or five core mechanics that are attached to a few different types of cards. And those games are so much about learn this thing and then learn it better than the guy playing next to you. And I really like those games a lot, but there is something to be said. Like, we play, like, it's so funny you play Arkham Horror. I mean, not funny, but,
it's terrifying.
That game's just way too intense for me.
It is really intense.
Yeah, so we, at the house, we've been playing Mansions of Madness, which is sort of like Arkham Horror for babies. And,
Babies First Arkham.
Yeah, Babies First Arkham, exactly.
Or alternatively, imagine Cthulhu Babies.
Cthulhu Babies, yeah. Cthulhu Babies is exactly what it is. And we really like that. And it's one of those games where the group, the parts of the people in the group who are really into board games and like mechanics and sort of strategizing, and this is what the goal is, and this is how we're going to accomplish it, and this is how we're going to do it, engage it on that level. But then somebody can show up with their buddy or their girlfriend who doesn't really know what's going on and still manage to be a hero and roleplay their character by throwing dice well. And that's something that I think that I, with a good DM, because essentially you have to DM, Mansions of Madness, somebody is running the game, with somebody who's cognizant of the tone of the group and the tension of the narrative, that game can be really good. And I like that about it, that it has both sort of in its mechanics.
Right, you can appeal to both.
Exactly, yeah.
So, Charlie, I mean, do you ever have, you know, your wife, or are you married? I'm sorry, I didn't even...
I am married, and in my wife's opinion, playing Dork games is a horrible, horrible fate. Almost as bad as being forced to go outside.
And you're like, look, hon, check out my Kickstarter page. What now?
Right, yeah, look at this.
You want to go to dinner tonight?
Maybe I'll go alone.
Oh, yeah. It's funny. My wife and I have, I'm very happily married. I've been together with my wife for... I guess we've been married six years, something like that. But we've been together for over a decade. But we have nothing in common. She hates cars, hates board games.
You're both human
like
beings.
Fish hunt or any of that.
Right, yeah.
You both need oxygen to subsist.
You're carbon-based life forms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, you know, like, I've been married, I guess, 2 months now. And it's still so recent that my wife's, I think she has sort of like going to the zoo has an appreciation for the thing. She's like, oh, that's nice. Or, oh, that's cute.
That's nice, honey.
Look at that thing over there doing the thing that it does. but not she doesn't have an active disdain. But I did get her to play. I got her to play Pandemic, which she thought was interesting. She liked that game, I think.
What's Pandemic?
Oh, Pandemic's a really great game. Pandemic's a game about you, and you actually play against the game. All the people who are playing the game, I think it's like 4 to 6 or 3 to 6, are all teammates. So nobody, it's not competitive, but you're playing against the mechanics of the game.
Right.
And the board is a world map that is continually spawning, like, diseases that is wiping out humanity. And you have certain abilities based on your skill set that you've drawn at the beginning of the game to help your team eradicate this global pandemic.
So this is like CDC the game?
Yeah, exactly. Actually, you have to go to the CDC in Atlanta, Georgia, to like do certain things on the map. It's really great. It's a really, really fantastic game. And I think there is some D6 element, or at least Charlie's Dice could be heavily featured if you choose, if you backed.
Right, if you backed.
Yeah. So yeah, it's a really good game. They have an expansion out called, I don't know, Pandemic. Everything goes to shit. I don't know.
Right,
what
it's yeah.
called. Even worse.
Pandemic, Dustin Hoffman gets bit by a monkey.
Yeah, I can't remember what it's called. Yeah. But the expansion actually does expand on the fun of the game. And Pandemic's definitely something worth checking out if you like to play games that are. If you like to play something that's non competitive in the sense that you're not trying to like tell your buddy, like, yo, I'm better than you. But it's competitive in the fact of we're all going to beat this thing together, and the game is incredibly hard.
Yeah, and Arkham Horror is similar in that aspect.
Oh, yeah,
in that
absolutely.
It's everyone versus the one. And I guess in Charlie's case, where Charlie, are you usually the DM in whatever games you play? Sometimes.
My gaming group subscribes to the philosophy that a good DM is to be cherished, and a great DM is to be locked in a dungeon and fed bread and water until he comes up with a nice campaign. So I am lucky enough though that we all DM our own systems. It used to be that I was the only DM. Now every player has their own system that they DM. I do Star Wars.
So you guys kind of run simultaneous games alongside each other?
Usually we do about a month rotation. We'll play a game for a month, and then we'll go on to another system, and then we'll basically rotate through. However, we got to play in Dresden Files, and everybody loves the books. If you haven't read the books, I highly recommend them.
Right. So real quick, now Dresden Files. This is the game that uses fudge dice, right?
Yeah, it uses. There's an open source system out there, system called Fate. And it uses 4d6s. The d6s have plus and minuses and a neutral side. So there's 2 pluses, 2 minuses, and a blank side. And everything you do is based off these 4 dice. You roll it, and they're weighted to roll 0. So because you add all the pluses and minuses and neutral together, like 50% of the time it's a 0. And then you have plus. You can get up to +4, -4. And +4, -4, like nearly, very rarely happens. It's even less than rolling a 20 on a d20.
So the dice are actually that's insane to me.
Yeah, I mean the dice aren't weighted, but because you roll 4 of them.
Oh, got it. Right. Yes.
So sorry, if there are 6 sides, there's a plus, a minus,
a blank.
Okay.
Yeah. So you add all that up, and that gives you your fudge, because they're called fudge dice because they fudge your stat. What if your attack is, or your defense, or
that's
whatever.
An apt name.
Yeah. So that's why it uses the fudge dice. So we started playing the Dresden Files system, which is based off the Fate system. And Fate is an extremely – it's a very open system. It's not something there is no rules lawyering in Fate. It just doesn't exist because of the way it's set up. And it's very more story-oriented. So we started playing this, and since it's set in the Dresden verse, which has like, what is it, 13 books now? And if you guys aren't familiar with Dresden, Dresden is a practicing wizard. He is listed in the Yellow Pages in Chicago, under wizard. And it's kind of a tongue in cheek private eye investigation, paranormal, fantasy realm.
Sounds good.
It is an extremely good book. Jim Butcher does a wonderful job writing them. And the audiobooks are stellar. They're done by the guy who played Spike on Buffy. What's his name? James Marsters. And he does an excellent job reading the books. So I read them, and I got all my buddies to read them. And now, since they've all read the books, we've basically played this one system for the past, like, 6 months.
Nice. Yeah, because your Kickstarter was the first time that I'd even ever heard of Fudge Dice. So it was particularly interesting to me to kind of find out exactly what they were used for. Apparently something well enough that there's a specific type of dice made for them that you felt it was worthy enough to add into your system.
Well, I basically did that because they're in the Kickstarter because that's what I made the original ones for. I actually only made one set of D6s, and that's for one of my players. His wife doesn't game with us. She games with another group across town. And I don't know if they play Fate or not, so I made her D6s. So the original ones I made were all for that they were all fudge dice for the game that we were playing. And we've been playing that now. But unfortunately, our DM that was DMing that had to go, you know, real life struck, and now he's working like 80 hours a week.
So ouch.
Guess who gets to DM that system now?
And have you had a lot of requests for the fudge dice, or has it mainly been D6?
There's been a lot of response for the fudge dice, much more so for the D6, which is what I expected.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of people getting fudge dice. And a lot of guys from Germany, because apparently there's a game called Maelstrom that uses the Fate system as well.
I was really hoping you were about to say Wine Handler, I only know about from Idle Thumbs and Sean Vanneman. I don't even know if that uses dice at all.
It doesn't. It's a bidding game. But I'm willing to integrate. You know what? Chris and Jake and I will knock our heads together, and we'll figure out a way to integrate a fudge die into the Wine Handler. And then we'll handle some vine, with Charlie's die. I think that's something we can do. We can figure that out.
But you're totally right. Now that I'm getting these really nice handcrafted dice that Charlie's making, I just every board game I play, I'm just gonna want to use them.
Oh, I can't wait for mine. I can't even remember what wood I ordered. But, I really can't. I think I just picked one and said, ugh, I can't remember because I was like. I have sort of like a crippling, I'm crippled by too many good choices.
Yeah.
You know, so I can't remember exactly which ones I ordered, but I'm really just, I can't wait to get them.
Yeah.
I'm really excited.
You're sending out the first batch this Friday, I thought you said, Charlie?
This first batch is going out this Friday.
Nice.
I was expecting to be able to do about 150 orders with the first batch.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, because the Kickstarter payment released well before it was supposed to. I went ahead and ordered all the stuff for the garage, and I ran out of room to store it. So
yeah, I imagine storage would be a problem because
dude. By the way, that photo of your garage transformed into a dice making parlor is awesome.
Right, I think your exact words, Sean, were to that. I say hell yes.
Yes, it was like hell effing yeah. This guy has a career in his garage now. That's fucking awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, it really is. I think one of my favorite photos that you had. I'm going to use a term that you informed me about, but you had your cherry picker there grabbing an engine out of your car.
Yeah.
Just to make room for the dice.
Yeah, well, that was what my garage used to be used for. I had an entire spare Miata drivetrain off in the corner of my garage where the laser cutter on the table is in one shot. Then I couldn't get anybody to buy it because I wasn't going to part it out. I wanted the whole thing gone. And so finally I put it up on the local DFW Miata forums. And I was like, first person to bring me a six-pack of beer gets it.
Hey, that's an original salesmanship. And actually, speaking of those photos up on your website, which, by the way, is artisandice.com, one of the photos you have is on the back end of the dice boxes, which you added into your Kickstarter for basically everyone that orders a set out of the goodness of your heart. And you have the playtesting of the dice?
Yeah.
And you're actually just kind of marking down the probability and what it says. I'm trying to – these dice killed a fairy. Is that what it says?
Yeah, basically what we're doing is my players, like all gaming geeks, are dice whores. And we happen to have a bunch of dice sitting in my garage. So I guess it was 2 weeks ago last time we played, they came up with the idea, why don't we play test some of these? I was like, cool, we can do that, and then you guys can just like write something on the inside of the box lid. Well, that set is done by Zach, and Zach is he's the science-y type guy.
Okay.
He's actually a physicist. He teaches physics and got a physics degree and all that good stuff. Well, what he does with his dice, he has this one orange D20 that he rolls because it statistically rolls a 16. And so he sits down and he rolls his dice hundreds of times while we're playing, and he just writes down what the numbers were and then pulls an average out at the end of the night. So that's what he did with those. That set of the dice is canary wood. And that's actually going to one of the guys to pick one of the grab bags. So
it seems like he's the right person to be your probability play tester there.
Well, so Mikey did another set, and what they're doing is they're basically, when they play test them, they may not have the probability stat like that. If Zach does a set of dice, that's probably what's going to be on the inside of the lid. But most of the time they'll put in like a little story of what they did with the dice that in that game.
Right. Like killed a fairy.
Yeah, these dice killed a fairy.
Nice.
Just little things like that, and then they'll sign the inside of the dice box. So. And it won't be a whole bunch of dice. It'll be like one or two sets a week. So if you get them, awesome. You're a really lucky individual, because I don't look at the inside of the box lids before I ship them out.
Man, I'm crossing my fingers over here now. That it just says, like, died and then spent the rest of the game drinking a Coors Light, hating everybody.
Yeah. Oh, man. So that's what we're doing with the dice now. And you were talking about having too many choices at 43 woods, I think is what you could choose from.
Yeah.
27, 45.
You kept adding new pledge levels, but it was good. I mean, you gave people something to look forward to. And like I said, on that last day where you went through, through 70, through 80, and hit 90.
Yeah, I didn't have anything at all planned out for 60, 70, 80, or 90, so I was pulling that all out of my butt.
I mean, really, what do you do past 50,000-year-old wood?
Yeah, pretty much. We added the Jamie's dice, which is named after my mom. Those are her favorite colors on the dice. And I was really surprised at how many people ordered those dice. And I wasn't allowed to say this in the Kickstarter, because their whole policy, you can't donate anything to charity, which I think is totally bunk. But all the proceeds from those dice are going to go to benefit diabetes research.
Nice.
That's awesome.
That is awesome.
So I was really, really pleased to see, that we did, I think 44 sets total is what I've got counted now for the Jamie's dice. That's which really cool. For your listeners it's purple heart, oak, pink ivory, and blue Mayho wood. And they come in a white, American holly, which is actually the hackberry tree. They call it American holly because it sounds nicer.
Right.
The wood is actually really, really pale. It's close to white as you can get in wood. So,
and is that's natural? I mean, it's just
that's natural. All the colors, unless the wood on the site says died,
right?
It's all natural. There's no stains. There's no. It's just a clear shellac that we finished the dice.
Which is great. I mean, one of the great things about this project is that, I don't know, you kind of got a lot of people interested in botany and, or I don't know, what the study of trees is.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Because there were a lot of people just saying, you know, I had no idea this many types of wood existed.
I didn't either.
Well, you sure wouldn't. But yeah, I mean, especially with Jamie's dice, I mean, the thing with Kickstarter is that, you know, kind of people get a idea of the person behind this project. It's not just a project. It's not a faceless project. A lot of times there's, you know, a person associated with it. So I think the fact that Jamie's dice was kind of a personal thing for you and something you wanted to do, it was just a really nice touch. And I'm glad it's something that a lot of people picked up and grabbed.
Yeah. So
now I know you obviously play some D&D and you DM and stuff. I mean, do you play any more kind of, I don't know, I don't want to say traditional, but obviously it's not traditional, but kind of manufactured board games? Like, I mean, Sean and I've been talking about like Arkham Horror, or he mentioned Pandemic. Do you play anything along those lines?
Risk. We play a lot of Risk, but not the standard version of Risk, because that's kind of old and boring.
Galactic Risk?
Well, I would love to, but I don't actually have a set of Galactic Risk, amazingly enough.
Wait, does Galactic Risk exist?
Yeah, it's Star Wars Risk.
I had no idea.
Yeah. I do not own a set, though. However, we do play Lord of the Rings Risk, which if you play by regular Risk rules and not the Lord of the Rings rules, will take you 3 or 4 days to finish a game.
Yeah, I remember my brother and some friends starting up games of regular Risk, and usually the board gets left there until next time they reconvene. I've never been involved in an intense game of Risk myself.
It gets a whole lot of fun. It was actually the last time we played Risk, we were playing. They have these cards that you get missions with, and to win the game you complete the mission. Well, my mission was to kill Nick, which he was playing the blue team, so I guess it was to kill blue. But anyway, so I had to kill Nick. And before it got to me, they had already killed Nick in the first turn. So they won the game for me before I ever.
Well, that's a lot like Arkham Horror, which is again a game where you're playing against the mechanics. And there have been times where, like, on the second location I visit and have an encounter, it's just like you meet a black man, or sorry, that came up completely the wrong way, but like they call him the Black Man just because he's a man masked in shadow, you know, and you are immediately devoured. Draw a new investigator.
Wow.
I mean, just like that, you can just, you know, well, you're done for. So, that game is a lot of fun, but you kind of have to embrace the brutality of it.
Cool. Have you guys played Order of the Stick?
No, but that's, I know what it, I'm not terribly familiar with it, but isn't that wasn't it on Kickstarter at one point?
It's a webcomic who is coincidentally also had another epically successful Kickstarter. I think he did like $1.5 million or something crazy like that.
Yeah, no, it went bananas. Yeah.
And Order of the Stick is if you have a week to kill, read the whole webcomic from start to finish. It's absolutely hilarious. But they have a game that, and the way, when you start the game, it says, do you want to play the short version, the long version, or the weekend killer? And the short version is like an 8-hour game.
The short version.
So.
Yeah, that's one of the things that my wife hates the most, is not only like the setup time that it takes to set up a game like Arkham Horror, but then, you know, she's like, you guys just finished the first game? That's stupid. I mean, she kind of embraces it and she accepts it and she's okay with it. But it's the time thing that she has a hard time understanding, how someone can sit there for, you know, X amount of hours rolling dice.
It's like when we play anything, because like Mansions takes like 3 hours, and like you have to kind of find ways to keep it super exciting, lest the mechanics sort of take over and bore people to death.
Right.
That's kind of, with new players, you have to like, you gotta keep it spicy, I find.
like dive headlong into a portal into another world.
Yeah, I always just say yes. I mean, whenever I run the game, whenever anybody wants to do anything, it's just yes.
Sure,
it's
go for it.
To see where it goes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's definitely the way that I've been playing Arkham Horror. Just, you know, occasionally, you know, maybe you want to play it safe and go there, but sometimes you gotta go fight those three fire vampires.
Oh, my gaming group, they subscribe to the philosophy I'm all out of bubblegum.
Yeah, there you go. Oh,
so what their solution to any problem is kick in the door and kill everything.
And how often does that work out for them?
Usually they end up pissing off something bigger and badder.
Nice, that's awesome. We're nearing the hour mark here, and I would love to keep talking, and I totally could, but I think this is just about good.
Yeah, I've got some dice to go make, because we actually have for backers.
I was about to say, you were probably drowning in mountains of dice.
I'm drowning in mountains of wood right now that needs to be turned into dice.
So, but how many friends do you have? I mean, do you have anyone that's actually helping you with the making of the dice?
I've got... three of my players are helping part-time make the dice. Two of them are teachers, so they are going to be helping mid-May, all summer long.
Cool.
So once they get where they can actually work, we'll actually be able to ramp up production a whole lot faster in May. And I've got the other guy, he works for the post office, so he comes over when he gets off in the afternoon and helps. He works about 20 hours a week, but mainly it's just me. So
yeah.
And the guy who's helping me now, he's only allowed to make boxes.
Is that because he's messed up dice, or?
That's because he's an idiot.
Okay, so you don't trust him with 50,000-year-old wood. I got it.
Yeah, but and the box stuff set up. I'll post a video of it up. We perfected the box setup so it's any monkey can do it. If you can hold the piece of wood to a machine, the machine does all the work.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to see some videos of the process that you're going through making some of these dice. Yeah. It's just something I'm always interested in, the making of process.
They start out with them. We don't get. I mean, I wish I could say that these came in logs or not logs that came in boards, and then we just cut dice out of them. Unfortunately, a lot of this stuff comes in hunks of tree that have to be cut down. So you start cutting smaller and smaller pieces until you get them down to where you can cut cubes out of them. So
that's awesome.
I just realized I have like 1,000 more questions that I want to ask, but I think we're going to wrap this up. So Charlie Brumfield from Artisan Dice, artisandice.com. Thanks a ton for joining us tonight.
Yeah, anytime, man. And good to get to talk with one of the guys from Idle Thumbs, man. You guys got a big ass podcast.
You should put that on the Idle Thumbs box quote. Big ass podcast.
Yeah, that'll be on the back of the first Idle Thumbs shirt we print.
And of course, Sean Veneman, thanks so much for us. And I know this was like super short notice.
No, my pleasure, for sure. Like it's good to I don't know, like I was a big fan of Charlie's Kickstarter, and I'm really excited to get my die.
Yeah,
and I really appreciate you guys reaching out, for sure.
Yeah, no, it's great, and hopefully maybe sometime we can have you back in kind of Charlie's position and maybe delve a bit into your kind of origin story.
Yeah, man, anytime. Sounds great.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Cool. All right, take care.